The Hagman and Hagman Report coming to you live. We are the Hagman and Hagman Report with something I like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. You know, folks, look at the landscape, the political, geopolitical landscape. We are looking at chaos right around the corner. Here tonight, of course, Stan Dale, to get into a lot of the issues that are on your mind. You've had a week, this past week, to review the changes that we're seeing, the earth changes, the signs in the heavens. I mean, all of this combined, and not to mention the political theater, but the geopolitics behind it, whether it's domestic or international. Yes, all of this together. And of course, we look at the news, at events, through the lens of, well, from a Christian perspective, don't we? Yes, we do. Folks, go to standeo.com now. While you're on, while you're listening to this, because, and click on the show images page, there are some image assets for tonight. Joe, take it.
Yeah, we got a lot to get into tonight with Stan Dale, from the extreme weather and from flooding to animals being killed. Stan, I see you have the story up there about the 323 reindeer being killed by lightning. There was a story today about, I think it was 13 more cows that were killed by lightning just today. Also,
it's great to have you back here.
Let me double check. I'm not sure. Was that in Norway where that happened with the reindeer?
Yes.
Okay, let me see. I don't believe it was in Norway, but I will check right now. They took the link off the site here, so I'm going to just do a quick search for it.
While you're looking for that, I'll say that I've heard from cattlemen over the years that they've come and found steers or cows that have been close to the power lines when the power lines have shorted out from moisture or rain and have killed the cows, you know, down at the base of these power lines. That's pretty normal. But this one here, I mean, you know, the reindeer do get killed by lightning strikes in Norway. That does happen from time to time. But to have such a large number of them and all together get wiped like that is quite unusual. I think that it's a sign of increasing super lightning storms. It's going to get worse, I think.
Absolutely.
Now, did you find that spot about the cows where it was?
No, I haven't here. But I did find a story about 500 cows from New Zealand disappearing in one evening, which is pretty odd.
Yeah, that'd take a lot of UFOs or something.
Yeah.
Was that North Island or South Island that disappeared?
Let's see here. They say Wellington, New Zealand.
Right. Okay, Wellington. Down near the border, the straits. And they don't know where they went or what happened?
Yeah, they don't know. They said locals said they'd never heard of any cattle rustling like this on a massive scale, and that's a nation that's home to some 10 million cows and double the number of people. The farmer involved is feeling too sheepish to talk about what happened, but he's absolutely embarrassed. He says that if you had $750,000 go missing, you wouldn't want to talk about it either, as they go into detail how much a price of a cow is worth. And they say in New Zealand, milking a cow, a cow is worth about $1,500 in New Zealand, and it depends on the weight. And you take 500 cows, and yeah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
They said they'd need to fill 13, a trailer truck would need to be loaded 13 times over to move that many cattle away from the land.
Well, it depends on how often he checked his herd. If he was being a bad steward, then somebody might have done that over several trips and just gradually got the whole herd.
Yeah. Still can't find
the cow story about the lightning.
It really is there. Texas lightning strike killed 19 cows as they shelter under a tree. This was in Texas.
Yeah.
A single bolt of lightning striking a tree took all of 19 cows who were sheltering during the storm.
I mean, is that unusual, Stan? That's not unusual, is it? I mean, 19
well,
cows?
Well, normally, yeah, I mean, you get deaths like that. But, you know, the size of the hit in Norway was interesting, and that is, of course, the largest hit they've ever seen in Norway, you know, for reindeer to get clobbered by lightning. On the slopes there, I mean, they're just... they must have all been huddled together and been in the rain and wet and made a good conductive spot. The ground underneath, you know, also had to have the capacity to carry the charge. But to hit that many of them, just bang, what I saw was there wasn't a lot of, like, didn't look like burn marks on them. And normally you'd get that from a strong bolt, but maybe it was just enough to depolarize their heart nerves and they just stopped working and fell down. I hope that was the way it was if they had to go. It'd be less pain involved. Just stop. What I was looking at that for was because the cosmic ray penetration of our atmosphere and coming down to the Earth. I mean, like, you know, like gamma radiation and high speed protons from deep space out there from whatever source. These things are normally kind of shielded off the Earth by increased solar wind from our sun and solar flares. We've seen from scientific reports here in the last few years that, okay, solar flares, they occur, the bigger ones come sweeping past us, hopefully not at us, but past us, and it shields us from a large portion of the incoming cosmic radiation from all sorts of places out there. Well, because the sun has been unusually quiet, they say, and you can click on this, by the way, go to the second row middle image, you'll see a white kind of graph with a little red line. Click on the type, and that will take you to the article at Space Weather, and down, oh, just two or three paragraphs down, you'll see that same graph, and you'll see that the article covers cosmic rays and what they do on the Earth. I mean, they trigger lightning, duh. We're seeing an increase in super lightning strikes and storms. Is it because of the increase in penetration by cosmic radiation? It can cause more rain, you know, by the same token. So anyway, the report shows that since last year, it's up 12.5% to 13%, the penetration of cosmic radiation. And if you're flying at high altitude in commercial airplanes, you'll be getting, you know, extra doses of it. And if you're, you know, a military or test pilot and stuff like that, if you're up there more frequently at higher altitude, you know, like, you know, 40, 50,000 feet, then you might get a little bit more than the normal. And certainly people on the space station would need to have increased shielding to mitigate that. They did find a few years back that human waste in orbit, if they put it in little packets and put it up into the walls of the space station or the spacecraft, that does also shield the astronauts from, you know, cosmic radiation and radiation from the sun itself in various frequencies. I found that it was apparently something to do with the hydrogen that forms and ammonia and things like that in the waste materials. But they found that it is really quite good to use hydrogen products to or hydrogen compounds to shield the astronauts from radiation. Quite unusual. I always thought it had to be like lead and, you know, really dense stuff, but hydrogen and you know, packaged poo. Great stuff.
That's very interesting. Stan, if I can ask, I know that there's obviously a big difference between cosmic radiation and the radiation from, let's say, the release at Fukushima. Are we able to know, I mean, I guess the question is, are we able to for sure know that this is cosmic radiation that would add to the level of doses people in airplanes would get rather than cosmic radiation, or could it be a mixture of both? Or is this just this is just the cosmic radiation?
It's more the cosmic. The Fukushima thing is not quite as much a threat, you know, in the upper atmosphere as stuff coming from outside the planet. I forget the study. There was something done some time back about supernova, you know, a sun or a star exploding. You know, if they're close enough, the gamma and ultra having shielding from cosmic radiation sources like supernovae, even if they're a long way away, is a good thing. A supernova nearby could change our climate for the worse. You want a lot of distance between you and any exploding star, especially, you know, the larger ones. Not just a nova, but a supernova. And anyway, you won't have anything, any warning about it when something like that happens. By the time that we see the light radiation from it, the thing has already hit our system and thoroughly cooked us. In fact, with the neutrino count that might come with it, it might have just depolarized every living thing on the planet and the solar system, and that's it.
Anyway. You know, Stan, you mentioned the word, that key word, neutrino. Now, I remember about a year and a half ago speaking to someone within the intelligence community talking about neutrinos and about, what is a neutrino and what do they do? And is there any relevance is there any reason we should be talking about this? I don't recall the exact context because I think the conversation was actually over my head, or at least his part was over my head. So neutrinos, should we be paying attention to any of this? And,
Yes and no. The neutrino itself is, for a long time, they didn't even think it had mass. It was such a tiny, you know, indistinct particle or things like that. Over at CERN, they've been, you know, certainly paying attention to neutrinos and neutrino decays. When a neutrino decays, it becomes a proton, electron, and an antineutrino. There's three things that come out of it, so it's got to have mass if it produces those things, and they have found that recently. But measuring the amount of these neutrinos that are produced by the sun and come through the Earth tells us the state of health of the sun. One of the things in the last decade that has come out of the deep mine detectors they use to determine the neutrino density from the sun is that the sun is not producing as many neutrinos per square whatever mile of our surface area as it used to, and it should. So it's just another indication that something is wrong with the sun. It's going quiet in that kind of reaction. Even though it's warmer, we're seeing, you know, coronal holes open up rather than coronal mass ejection. We're seeing these holes open up and radiation coming out of it. I really think this is just another way to tell that the sun is going through a phase state change that may have started, you know, 30, 40 years ago, but it's becoming more and more obvious from the various tests that the solar neutrino count is down. I'm just trying to remember where they had the they had this cave. I mean, they went down deep to put the cave in there and put these special water tanks and stuff and detectors in them to detect the neutrinos way underground just from the sun. And I can't remember why they wanted to do it so deep underground, but I think they put it in like a gold mine up in the Dakotas, in South Dakota, perhaps. They use a very clean water, like a distilled or, you know, pure water, not rainwater, anything like that. And then they've got these special little tubes down at the bottom of it. I don't know whether, I guess they might be spaced, but they might be solid. I don't know, you know, across the base of the tank. They're called photomultiplier tubes. And so when a neutrino hit it, it would make a very faint light in the water, and these super sensitive light tubes, in essence, would pick up that light. And I think it might be something like Cherenkov radiation that we get from tachyons produced in nuclear reactors that produces blue water. But anyway,
okay,
that's, you know, about all we need to do on neutrino.
All right, thank you.
Yeah,
thanks. All right.
Okay.
Wow.
But anyway, okay, now that increase in cosmic radiation, it is leading to anomalous weather, and this I don't think has anything to do with pole shifts or anything else or Nibiru. It is simply the decrease in our shielding, which is kind of an interesting point when you think about it, because we do know the north and south magnetic poles are weakening, have known that for some time, but it's accelerating, and these create the ionospheric shield that we need to shield us from cosmic radiation and from solar radiation that's in the lethal bands. So as our magnetic field weakens, even that protection is leaving us, and it's causing us to experience more violent weather. All these things add up. Hey, did you guys get anybody report to you here over the weekend about the bunch of earthquake recordings over at Yellowstone on their seismometers?
We had a number of people send us. I mean, yes.
There's from the earthquake in Italy to a few earthquakes. I forget where it was in somewhere in Europe where there's a history of earthquakes, major earthquakes shutting down airplane travel. There was 2 4.0s under a volcano there, and then what's been going on in Yellowstone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then along with the tropical depressions and hurricanes from the Gulf to
and if I can just interject one thing here, folks, please pray for our listener Karen in Rome, Italy. And Karen, if you're listening, please check in to let us know how you're doing. Our prayers are with you. But Stan, going back to the earthquake, and Joe, thank you for allowing me to do that. But yes, the earthquakes and reports in Yellowstone, what's up with that?
Well, I got, you know, a cam that watches the earthquakes was on top of it as it was happening. I said, look at what's happening in Yellowstone. All the recorders showing, you know, about a 3-minute earthquake that was pegging the needles there. So I started looking around all over the planet trying to find, you know, some big earthquake, you know, a Richter 7 or 8 or something somewhere, and there was nothing. It was calm out there. And poking around, eventually I found that in Wyoming, at the south end, the south side of Yellowstone National Park, a 4.8 earthquake occurred on the 27th of August at exactly the same time that all these readings hit the Yellowstone seismometers. Now, on the third row down there, the first couple pictures, in fact, the whole third row is to deal with that particular event. One story at the right side of the row there, that black kind of square with the little, you know, seismic waves on it. That guy says that the official story is that it was due to fracking somewhere miles and miles away from where the quake occurred. And not everybody is kind of buying that story. But it is interesting in that of a 32 seismometers that are public anyway, Yellowstone, only two of them didn't register that 4.8 earthquake in the southern part of the Yellowstone Park. That's not normally where I would expect to see magma or volcanic activity beneath the surface. It's south instead of northwest, north-northwest corner of the park. But there are, in the next row, there are images I took with Google Earth showing where the seismometers were. All those green things are the seismometers. And then the yellow dot with an arrow, the first one, shows at the very south end of the park where that quake occurred. You can see there's mountains between it and the rest of the seismometers up there in the heart of the Yellowstone Park. Then I think it was Kim sent me also a link to a live camera there on the north part of the Yellowstone Park, looking toward the south, toward the lake, toward Fisherman's Fisher's Wharf or Fisher's Stream, something like that, there in the center of the lake area. And there was a fire there, and I thought, well, now, that's interesting. Is that where the earthquakes were occurring? If you go to the second graph on that green row there, you see in 2010 there was a flurry, like hundreds of small earthquakes under Richter 2, that occurred a little bit further west than where the fire is today. But periodically you do get flurries of quakes. And where this one was in 2010, I think I remember when that happened, is where they found that there was magma movement in a tube going west, which might be a way that it's escaping into the thinner part of the crust, and there may be a magma flow or an eruption there at some time. But anyway, it was interesting to see that pattern was there at the time in 2010, and here we are 6 years later and kind of worrying about it again. That Bellringer quake, that was interesting. If you look at the two graphs or two pages, I've got the thumbnails up above that. It's 30 of 32 Yellowstone seismometers show quake. That's one. And then the one to the right of it is two. So the one to the right of number two, if you look at that, you can see probably the ones that registered the longest vibration of that was Moose Creek. And Black Ranch in Hebgen Lake. And if you go back to the thumbnails over there, you can then see that, you know, Flag Ranch is down toward the bottom there, where close to where the earthquake occurred. And Moose Creek and Hebgen are over in the northwest corner where, you know, I suspect that the plasma move or the magma move is occurring and will occur for some time. That tells me that it's either a more sensitive earthquake at Moose Creek, or Moose Creek was recording other little things happening there at the same time and added together. If you look at the Moose Creek thumbnails on the second image there, the number two image, you'll see a second row, first picture, you'll see that there was a lot of activity, little tremors all around it, and then the big quake down in Wyoming. So maybe Moose Creek is more sensitive, a different kind of seismometer, don't know, but it is recording over an area that I would suspect they'd be watching, and it, because of its sensitivity, I think it picked up a lot more things and stretched out the shaking of the Wyoming quake because of that. Anyway, those things are there for you to look at.
Very interesting, Stan.
Yeah, now, I forget who sent this to me, but there's a PDF that you can look at on the row underneath all those things. That PDF is Weather as a Force Multiplier, Owning the Weather in 2025. If you click on that, it'll download. Did you do that?
Yeah, I've read this before. It's probably been a year or two at least, but I have read this. This is a very detailed PDF that talks about how they, the powers that be can own and weaponize the weather. And they say that they can and will be able to do this before 2025.
Well, they've been able to do that before. I mean, they've done it already. But to be able to completely control it, weaponize it, you have to do it in a manner that the enemy, whether that be in warfare, whether it be in population control, that whoever your target is not able to detect it and counter it with a negative effect on the environment that they're trying to change to create, you know, rain or drought or whatever. The U.S. is the only one with this kind of technology. Russia and the United States signed a pact in 1977, I think it was, banning weather warfare, use of weather warfare between them. That didn't limit China or any other country from practicing that. And, of course, both the United States and Russia, it didn't stop them from researching and developing knowledge about how to use weather to control the environment of not only their own country but other countries. And even though they're not using it for warfare allegedly, we know that that could be turned to that kind of a weapon whenever they felt like it. On that same row on the right, there's an article that it shows flooding, and if you click on the picture or the text, either one, it goes to a 27 August article about the floods in Iowa, and you know, they had like 8 inches of rain, which is double their amount of rain for August, in 2 days. Now, if you go on down the article, in addition to saying about that flood, the guy is showing that, you know, other things in other countries like tropical storm in Mexico, how many kills, and in Pakistan and Macedonia, and, you know, temperature rises in various places. Lightning strikes in Odisha, India, killing 35 others and 40 people and 35 injured. Anyway, you can scroll down that at your leisure later, and you can see there that fires in India killed 124 people, 55,000 cattle, and damaged 336,000 plus homes after monsoon rains hit. When you put all these little factors together, and I think this guy that put that together there, it starts to tell you that, boy, the weather is not our friend at the moment.
Yeah, you can say that again. From the flooding that just happened in Louisiana, even here up in our area, you know, since a few weeks back, we saw this very intense storm, got about a month's worth of rain, if maybe 2 months' worth in one night, I think about 5 inches. And, you know, these, as you said last week, these thousand-year weather events, what was there, five or eight in the last six months or something like that? It was,
yeah,
you were
yeah,
all
at least five,
mentioned that.
Yeah.
And it just shows, you know, the first few hours we were talking about the increase in spiritual wickedness and demonic activity, and it seems to correspond with an increase in severe and catastrophic weather from these flooding events to the earthquakes and the, you know, magma and volcanic problems that we have all across the world going on right now. Folks, you're listening to Stan Deo on this Hagman and Hagman Report Tuesday edition. We are coming up against the break in a minute.
Yes, I just wanted to pipe in here. I'm not going to interrupt you. Stan, I've been getting emails upon emails upon emails because you're the guy to ask about the internet surrender. You and Holly, Holly was so well received last week about the prophetic perils.
Right.
And then you, of course. But the ICANN internet, surrender of the internet. People want to know your opinion on that. I don't know if that's in your wheelhouse or if you feel that's in your wheelhouse, but boy, people want to know what you think of that and how you think that we, and that includes you and Holly and us, are going to be affected by this. So,
on the other side, after maybe the break or what?
Yeah, if you don't mind. You're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report. Okay.
Yeah, Holly just correct my guess there on how many of those 1 in 1,000 year floods are talking about. She said there's been 10 of them in the last 6 years.
Wow.
And there've been four this year.
Wow.
We'll be right back. Stay with us. Folks, we're talking with Stan Deo from StanDeo.com. Bookmark that site. Grab the books that Stan and Holly have both authored and Stan's lectures as well, from Dare to Prepare to Prophetic Perils to a Cosmic Conspiracy. We have been talking with Stan for one segment. We got one segment left before the top of the, before the bottom of the hour break. We were talking about ICANN, the surrendering of the internet control from the U.S. to the UN, or an international body. And Stan, if we could get your opinion on this. I know that I've heard a few different opinions. One was said that since the internet is federally controlled, Obama has no power whatsoever to hand it over to an international body without the approval of Congress. But as we know, he did so anyway, and I doubt there will be any ramifications for that. But as my dad mentioned, there has been several questions regarding this move, and from censorship to the legality of what they did. Do you have an opinion on this?
I do.
What could happen?
Well, look, if you look at this from a globalist position, the globalists look at the whole world situation, right? The world government and the United States, because of, you know, most of us here that live and form the United States, have a very resistant attitude, a very nationalist attitude to joining, you know, like the United Nations or global organizations at the moment, because they are in direct opposition to the way our Constitution lets us live. So, in an effort to probably protect the rest of the world that has internet, the businesses, the governments, and whatever, in case America fails, you know, in case it's attacked or whatever, the internet needs to be elsewhere and functioning and controlled offshore in case they lose the U.S. And I think that that's the long-term, game plan, so that the world leader that does emerge, whoever it is, will be able to use that communication network for cashless trading all over the world. They need to preserve that. That's a major tool that they need to control the population monetarily and otherwise, and to track people. So I think that's why the move's happening, and whether Obama did it or whatever, that it was going to be taken from us and over into Europe and spread throughout the rest of the countries that eventually are going to control the new world order, probably several European countries and several Arab countries, Turkey being one of them. In the new 10-region map of the world that the Club of Rome has long put forward. Anyway, I don't like it, but, you know, is coming, and it's so close now then that every day almost something else adds to the puzzle on the desk there about how the New World Order is forming and will look when it's finished. We're collateral damage to the whole United States.
And that one of our emailers from actually from Europe had equated your assessment of the Antichrist, your investigation, your compilation of potential candidates with that transfer, with the understanding that, hey, you know, there's going to be some Islamic control and hence censorship over this, which could affect the religious component to this one world system of governance, which very eloquently stated, and that from George, living in Germany. Yes, George.
You know, before I get too far off of the weather, I wanted to look at earthquakes. I've noticed something that's quite interesting. On the second row of my show images page, on the left and the right, the end images, go to the one earthquakes last 7 days North and South America. Click on that and look at it. Now, if you look at the quakes in the last 7 days, they form a line all up the coast of the west coast of South America, right up in Central America, right up through toward Mexico City, and then it stops. And then you see that there's a lot more little tiny quakes around California in the Southern California area, and then an arm that scoops up around toward Yellowstone. Those are, you know, precursor small quakes for pressure release. Now, if you look at that same image, but over into the middle of the Atlantic, between the kind of the pointy part of South America and the knob on Africa, at north of Ascension Island there, on the 29th, which was probably something like 36 hours ago, there was a 7.1 there on that fault, on that like a plate tectonic border. And the same, you know, if you look, go up and toward the Azores, up there where it'd be between New England states, Canada, and the Mediterranean opening there at the northwest part of Africa there at the Gibraltar area, there is a 5, Richter 5, in the Azores Island. Now, Kim, Earthquake Kim, has been monitoring these things and sending me data on it. There's a lot more little earthquakes occurring there than USGS shows in this particular map, because you just need to go to a different sensor array over in Europe to pick these up. But it's showing that fault line in that area there, or that tectonic plate line, which is a fault line, is becoming more active. And probably 3 or 4 years back, I read a report, which I shared with you guys, about a new tectonic plate fracture forming from the Azores area there in North Africa, heading over toward the United States, so that eventually there will be a break there. Now, it might be that the break veers down toward Puerto Rico, those areas where you see a cluster of quakes. There's a few of them there. Or it might go slightly higher than that, but that whole kind of region going all the way down to the South Pole and looping around, you see that there is a lot of stress being released, and significant releases. I mean, when I say significant, you know, Richter 5s or betters, up the west coast of South America and then down the South Pole area where the Eltanen asteroid hit, near the Skoy Island in South Georgia and the Sandwich Islands. So you can see a pattern forming there. And certainly there is an allied-type pattern forming over to the west in Asia, particularly a 6.8 in Burma, which was probably about 6 or 7 days ago, about a week ago. But you can see the loop around that fault line or that plate tectonic border all the way around to just north of New Zealand's North Island. And Japan has been having a cluster of quakes, and some of them being off Fukushima, which I covered last week. Now, then Hawaii is showing a number of smaller quakes. Is that due to, the major volcanoes becoming active again? It's so far away from everything else, I don't know what would be doing it, because normally that area moves over a hot spot as it has for a period of time, and that produces the volcanoes. But something is making earthquakes and volcanoes more active. And I was reading a report over the weekend that we have, like, they think maybe 130,000 volcanoes, count the ones under the sea, and many more than that, but about 130,000 that have activity of some sort at the moment. you know, interesting.
I saw an article. You know, NASA, I think it was NASA, this was sometime last week, said that there was a 99% chance of L.A. to have a major pressure release earthquake within the next 2 years.
I believe I have the article saved.
Let me see if I can find it. But it was something I was surprised to see, and it was from NASA, so I don't know how accurate they are. Yeah, here it is. NASA says massive earthquake is 99.9% likely to rock LA within the next 2 years. I'll put this in your Skype stand. This is from the Express UK. And yeah, I read this last week and immediately thought of you. And it talks about how that there are indicators of pressure quakes happening around that fault line in which you're talking about.
Well, yeah, that must be what they're talking about.
Yeah.
It might not be 2 years. It might be less. I mean, it's in the next 2 years, which could be today and up till the next 2 years. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I got that link. It came through here. I'll have a look at that later.
Jet Propulsion Laboratory, JPL in Pasadena, have warned a series of mini tremors beneath the city of Los Angeles caused pressure to build up. And they cite a 5.1 earthquake from 2014 that they say is still left over from that strain. And they say that they expect a massive hit before April of 2018.
I'll be darned. Yeah, well, you know, normally, if you know that there's pressure building up on a major fault line, you can go to contributor, you know, smaller fault lines that connect into the main one, and detonate at certain depths, you know, depending on the formation underground, but detonate to cause smaller quakes to relieve the pressure on it. But it's like when you take a piece of clear plastic, you know, we used to call it Perspex down in Australia. I forget what the name of it is in America, but it's like, you know, clear plastic that you start to bend to break it. You're bending it in half. And if you watch it in the sunlight, you'll see that little micro fractures all form around where it's going to break. And it's like those micro fractures are releasing the pressure that they were holding by, you know, their atomic bonds or whatever, releasing that pressure to go to the point of breaking. And so this might be what's happening in L.A. there. Maybe that's what they're talking about. Look, they've been warning people all over the West Coast over the last couple of years with civil drills and stuff. Say again? Oh, plexiglass, yeah. Sorry, Holly was telling me that. That's what I was talking about. But they've been warning people with drills and preparedness things for tsunamis and what to do with earthquakes and what not to do. And they're not wasting time. The government, you know, basically has a vested interest in California and the West Coast in general, particularly California, which produces a lot of the food that we eat and various other things. But so when they're investing that much time and money into the public, kind of on a, let's see, if we're not prepared here, let's get prepared in case something happens. They're telling you something is going to happen. And now they come out with this announcement. This is giving a warning to people in the area that are thinkers and pay attention to the news and the subtlety of it, that if you need to get out of town for a while, you might start planning on that pretty soon. Wow.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Well, anyway, one interesting little sidelight talking about Antichrist and that kind of stuff and about the Arab influence. You know, I lean either toward Prince Mohammed bin Salman or toward Erdogan in Turkey. And certainly Erdogan is rising to the front as far as a guy that's being revered in his country as a super sultan, you know, like the one that formed the Ottoman Empire, and, you know, a modern-day Solomon, and, you know, he's really gaining favor there. Now, at the same time, young Prince Mohammed bin Salman has been going all around the planet opening up business deals and trade with China and Russia and Pakistan. He's been a very busy boy. And one thing that I saw that was kind of, well, I don't know, of interest related to Atlantis, is since Atlantis is there at Dammam Island, just right next to Bahrain, on the west coast of the Persian Gulf or the Arab Gulf, Prince Ben Solomon has been over to China in the last couple of days, meeting with the Vice Premier Zhang Gaoli, and he has made a deal with him to come over to Saudi Arabia and build 100,000 new homes in an area that's kind of a very wet area. It's been that way for thousands of years in the desert there, about 100 miles, well, between 90 and 100 miles off the coast there, where the capital of Atlantis was in my discovery. So I find it interesting that they're going to have tourism, and they're talking to Six Flags about, you know, bringing in an entertainment park or several. And they're talking to the Chinese now, then making an agreement to build these homes for 100,000 people. And there's a road that connects that settlement there with all the water and aquifers and stuff, and the growth potential there for food and stuff. That area is connected by road to Dammam Island, where the oil fields were discovered there that made Saudi Arabia rich. But now, where we know the oil is dwindling, and he's trying, you know, Mohammed bin Salman's trying to turn the Saudi economy over to entertainment, tourism, precious metals, that kind of stuff. And so here is a sign that I think they're going to eventually announce that they have Atlantis there. And so they're getting ready for the tourist influx there. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, hey. Another thing, you know, there's down toward, how many rows down is that? That's 1, 2, 3, 4, I should have numbered these 5, 6, 7 rows down. There's a black and white picture of a guy pointing at a little model of the Earth with rings and wires on it. You click on that and you'll read the article about the guy. The main thing that I put that up for is because of the image to the right of that, where I have one of my old Encoda earthquake predictor maps. It's on our website, where I explain how I use the electric field variations in the fault lines to determine where an earthquake was going to occur. This guy on the left is showing the magnetic and electric links of the sun linked to causing earthquakes. So I'm being vindicated bit by these people now making these discoveries come forward. And of course, the U.S. Navy and NASA, they don't give me credit for what I gave them. But anyway, they may have already known it anyway. I suppose they did. But electricity from the sun, magnetism from the sun, all these things affect electric charge and pressures that do trigger earthquakes. So just fun thing there.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I guess you got questions, have you?
Electricity, being electricity and magnetism, are two, you know, huge forces that are part of our universe. And we did a show with another show with Anthony Patch recently, where we were talking about CERN and, you know, the electric universe and magnetism and how they're, CERN's being used to, you know, obviously they're creating this, he talked about this plasma accelerator that's being added on to the particle accelerator, and the potentials that had to create havoc on the Earth. And I guess I got to read this a little bit more, but it makes more sense of how, you know, in an electric universe, how electricity and magnetism can cause, you know, the kind of Earth changes that we see.
Yeah, I've been asked to write a foreword to the book that he's doing with Gonzo and with Woodward and a couple other fellows, and yeah. I did read in this part of the book about the new way to use the CERN to increase the electron or the energy of the colliding beams by, gosh, I don't know, 1,000 or a million times. It's just some incredible amount. And when they do that, that's very risky. I mean,
yeah.
The kind of reactions that may come out of that. But, of course, they're saying that if you had him on the show, I think he was probably saying about the threat to opening up a hole between universes.
Yes, he was. And we actually do have an email question about CERN for you, and it's actually tied into what you just said you read. They ask, one of your previous guests said scientists at CERN are to install a linear accelerator. The energy released would increase 1,000 times. My question concerns the detection of this energy. And they go on to ask, looking at technological improvements over the last 10 to 20 years from computers to phones, I would expect scientific hardware would improve on a similar scale. Science would
conceptualize the design of hardware with a theoretical bias. And they go on to say engineers would develop the detection hardware at these specifications. Now, questions to Stan. How would a scientist design a detector for an unknown energy? That's one question. And then the second one is, if detection is not improved and the power of the experiment is increased, would this no longer be considered science but reckless experimentation?
Well, to make a method of determining an unknown energy, it's, you know, that's such an open-ended question, because are we looking for energy in extremely high frequencies, in a form that it's the matter of it, or the energy of it, is so small that it goes through the molecular matrices of all matter and equipment that we would design, because it's so tiny it passes right through like it's not there. What are we looking for? You see, it's such a broad question. I don't know how to answer that. It's just, you know.
I guess reading this, they just was wondering if there's a way to actually detect the energy output that is being put out by CERN, but I guess even their own instruments are the only thing that seem to be suitable to be able to do that, and that the rate they're increasing the amount of energy they're using, I would guess there is no scale.
Well, yeah, and how close would you have to be, in other words, to the CERN when it happens? You know, gosh, I know that they build up a lot of energy in the coils and the toroid that forms the loop, you know, that's inside the loop of the CERN reactor. And they accelerate two beams in opposite directions, and then eventually they steer the beam so they collide. Now, the collision releases a huge amount of energy on a subatomic level. The real amount of energy to accelerate these things up to near the speed of light is in the magnetic coils that go all the way around the circle of the whole CERN accelerator. That is enough on normal tests they've done to power a small city, you know, with electricity and they have that amount of energy in there for maybe 8 to 12 hours as they ramp up these two beams to make them collide. Now, they have been colliding these particles, as I understand it, kind of off-axis, off-center, so they glance at each other and split off parts of each other, and they were lighter weight molecules or atoms rather than you know, heavy things like lead, which they're planning to use in this new method. As a result, they are now going to focus the beams to hit exactly head-on, and that will be an annihilation of both particles at that speed, which, you know, it's unknown. It's kind of, to us, it's unknown what will happen. Maybe they have mathematical formulas that one way it does this or the other way it does that, but either way it's going to be safe, and as long as they haven't forgotten some contingency that may happen at that kind of a test, it may not be careless, you know, experimentation. It may be logical and safe and controlled. I don't know. That's something that's so deep in the bowels of their computer network and their the whole organization that none of us would know unless they brought us into the inner circle, I'm sure.
No, you're right about that. Stan, we got about 5 minutes left of the program. If there's any, I'm going to turn it over to you. If there's anything that we did not talk about that you want to talk about,
Oh yeah, a couple things. On the road just above where we're talking about the electric and magnetic effects on the earthquakes, you'll see a picture of Erdogan and one of his, I think it's the president or something of Turkey. It's prime minister. That's what it is. He compared Erdogan to Ottoman Sultan that invaded Constantinople. It's an article worth reading, because it adds to the fact I was telling you about how much they are starting to, you know, revere Erdogan in his country. Coupled with that, and if you go across two pictures on that road, you see a picture of Netanyahu looking out the window there, and he's talking there. Israel's talking about can Israel and the Arab states be friends? that article goes on to talk about the benefits of that, the problems in the past that have diplomatically separated Saudi Arabia and Israel, which means that the movements now then between the Saudis and Israel to kind of shake hands and be friends may be a ruse to allow the Arab-led consortium to attack Israel. I'm watching this situation very closely. At the same time, we see Erdogan, Turkey, making overtures to Israel to, you know, get their oil and their gas, to buy from them, to be friends with them all of a sudden. You know, they've reestablished their relations, and Erdogan's no fool, and neither is Netanyahu, but Erdogan, I swear, you watch, he's going to be somehow or another organizing the rebuilding of Solomon's temple rather than, you know, the second temple period. Just watch it, because Erdogan is coming to the front, and so is young Ben Solomon. All players in a very complex puzzle that's going to play out here very shortly in the Middle East. Look, things are happening. The threat of terror attack in Germany being so great that Merkel says, okay, put away 10 days of food and water in case we have a severe terrorist attack and we can't get to help everybody in the country. Have your own preparations there. That kind of an attack is big. And to see Abrams tanks, the U.S. Abrams tanks, moving on train convoys in Germany up toward the border to the neighboring countries, this tells you that it's this terrorist attack may not be purely a terrorist attack. It may be people incited by Russia to move into Germany or into the region. All this is horribly pregnant with war. And at a time where we're having a national election for president here, gosh, you'd hate to have that happen during the election period, because it might, you know, mean that you have to delay the elections or something. You see what I mean?
Yeah, something that I think we're being prepped for mentally.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Wow. Yeah. Well, Stanley did it.
One of my little dog children has just nudged my elbow and said, I need to go outside, Dad.
You know, and that, boy, enjoy that, because that's the nice things of life. Stanley, you brought us to the end of another program. God bless you, my friend. That was a fascinating hour with you. Thank you so much for sharing.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to share with the audience there. You know, Lord willing, we'll do this again next week.
Sounds great to
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. You and Holly have a great weekend, Stan. Have a great week and weekend.
Yes.
Holiday weekend.
Yes,
thank
holiday
you guys.
Weekend indeed here in the United States. All right. That'll do it for us tonight, folks. Stan Dale, what a great... StanDale.com. And folks, Prophetic Perils by Holly Dale, fantastic. It's a fantastic overview of where we're at right now, where she worked hard on that. And, of course, what Stan mentioned earlier about the 10 regions, Cosmic Conspiracy, mm-hmm. in that book as well. Get that while you can.
Yeah, before we go... a few headlines we just want to glance over because we got
time.
We got
wait a minute,
about a minute and a half here.
Okay.
And these are important headlines. You mentioned this: Homeland Security eyes special declaration to take charge of elections.
Yes.
Now, along with that, they are looking at UN oversight also of the U.S. elections. As the FBI has detected, allegedly, two breaches against two state voter systems.
They're going to find more, I suspect, and to justify this UN / DHS takeover fully now. We're a third world nation.
Yep. Also,
thank you.
There have been 30 deleted Clinton emails related to Benghazi that have been... found again or put back together.
30.
The State Department attorney said Tuesday the agency had discovered 30 Benghazi-related emails among the records recovered from Hillary Clinton's private server.
Those which weren't bleached.
Yeah. What's interesting is they say that they are going to, before they turn them over to Judicial Watch, they have to go through the classified material and make sure that they redact the classified material that allegedly...
I didn't think there was any classified
material to redact. So why do they need the time to redact the information?
I love those page denied. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. And also, major bank officials warn, prepare for a economic nuclear winter. What does that mean? We're going to be talking about that and a lot more news and current events tomorrow with an interesting guest who has a very important and interesting perspective.
And a great resume. Mm-hmm. Tim Weldon is going to be coming on with us, fluent in Russian, the former weapons inspector. Until tomorrow, God bless. Saddle for battle, folks.